In 1900, Nicholas started a new tradition of regularly celebrating Easter, Easter being the highest holiday on the Russian Orthodox calendar, celebrating Easter in Moscow, the ancient heart of old Russia, and in the Kremlin itself, in the most ancient churches and cathedrals. And here, he said, especially in Moscow and especially on Easter, he could enter into communion with the Russian people, with, and these are his words, with the true children of our beloved church. And in unity, in prayer with my people, I can draw new strength for serving Russia. Or another example, in the fall of 1902, in a letter written back home to his wife, Alexandra, who was often ailing, hence rarely traveled with him, hence where we have this wonderful body of letters between the two of them. In 1902, Nicholas wrote of driving through the countryside in a troika, a cart pulled by three horses, a very traditional sort of vehicle in Russia, and he's on his way to some military maneuvers. He was often on his way to military maneuvers. And he writes the following in his letter home. We passed through large villages where the good peasants presented simple bread and salt, and all went down on their knees, showing such a touching, childish joy. Like many before him, he believed that the people were like children who loved him in a unique and special way. Or consider his attitudes during the celebrations of the tercentenary, the 300th anniversary of the existence of the Romanov dynasty, celebrated all over the country in 1913. During these celebrations, Nicholas decided to take a grand tour throughout the Russian heartland, the old core of Muscovite Russia, the Moscow regions and the Volga regions. And huge crowds came out to greet him while he traveled about the country, often in a boat. Many would in fact wade and swim into the rivers to touch his boat while he sailed down the Volga or the Moscow rivers. Nicholas was totally overwhelmed, totally and deeply impressed by what he described as the people's love of autocracy. So much, in fact, was he impressed by these signs of great devotion to him personally that after this trip, which was in the wake of course, the 1905 revolution and some of the initial democratic reforms that were passed then, that he suggested, I think it's time to close the parliament altogether, which he never liked anyway, close it entirely. What need was there, he argued, for this artificial, mediated link to the common people? His connection to the people was immediate and direct, almost mystical. Who needs a parliament? He knew what the people needed and believed. Saner minds advised him that this would lead to a catastrophe if he closed the parliament. Or as another example of his self-image, and indeed many people shared in the self-image of him, this image of him as a tishaishi, loving tsar, as tsar father, consider his response to the massive demonstrations that took place on Palace Square, right outside the Winter Palace, at the very start of World War I in August of 1914. He comes out onto the balcony, a huge crowd he sees on the street, on the square before him, and standing beside his wife, Alexandra. And at this point, he does a very interesting thing. He bows his head to the crowd. This is a traditional gesture of devotion of tsar to the people, used throughout the 19th century, actually much older and then revived in the 19th century. This was the classic gesture of the tishaishi tsar. The mass of the people, in response to his bowing to them, fall down on their knees and sing the Russian national anthem, the words of which begin, God save the Tsar, strong and mighty. Bozhe Tsarya Khrani. Nicholas and Alexandra reportedly wept at this moment. Tears of faith, one might say, in this special bond between Tsar and people. It was in a similar spirit and with similar faith that during World War I, Alexandra, his wife, and Nicholas's elder daughters, Olga and Tatiana, decided to serve as nurses, literally sisters of mercy, in the war, personally caring for wounded soldiers, part of this special bond between the Tsar's family and the people. And it was in a similar spirit and with a similar faith in this special bond between Tsar and people that Nicholas took over complete command of the army in 1915, at a time the war was going very badly for Russia. And he was certain that his charismatic presence, that his very body, his very presence as this divine autocrat with this special bond to the people would transform the whole success of the military effort. Just like you recall, Nicholas I was able to, he believed, quell riots by his presence alone.